Good morning, everyone. I'd like to call this meeting of the House Special Committee on Tribal Affairs to order. It is now 8:02 a.m. on Tuesday, March 26th in Capitol Room 106. Members present are Representative Tallarico, Representative Kopp, Representative Lincoln, Representative Vance, and myself, Representative Zulkowski, Chair. Let the record reflect that we have a quorum to conduct business. Please take this time to silence your cell phones for the duration of the meeting. Before we begin, I would like to thank Tribal Affairs Committee aide Grace Singh, Julia Bushman, the Secretary from Records, and Taylor Kelly, the Juno LIO from the Juno LIO for staffing the committee today. We're very excited to hear a presentation on a case study in tribal partnerships. So we will begin today's hearing with a presentation from Gavin Dixon, the Community Development Manager in the Division of Environmental Health and Engineering for the Alaska Native Tribal Health Consortium. Mr. Dixon, please state your name for the record and begin your presentation.
My name is Gavin Dixon, and as Tiffany mentioned, I work for the Alaska Native Tribal Health Consortium and the Division of Environmental Health and Engineering. Thank you for having me here today. Okay, so today I wanted to talk a little bit about a few different projects that are examples, I think, of tribal leadership and tribal partnership more than anything. And one specifically that I'll focus on, spend the majority of the presentation on today, will be on the status update on the Newtok relocation effort. To give a little bit of background before we get started, and Alaska Native Tribal Health Consortium, Environmental Health and Engineering, is part of ANTHC, and I know previous presentations here have talked a little bit about tribal health. And in Division of Environmental Health and Engineering, we focus on preventative health, largely on water and sewer and health clinics, and doing some of that health work to prevent ever having to get into the hospital. So I'll talk a little bit about some of the programs and projects that we are working on as an organization with different tribal entities and non-tribal entities and our relationship with the state on those projects to promote our vision that Alaska Native people are the healthiest people in the world. So I'll start talking about Newtok, give an update on that project, and then I'll focus on a few other programs, the program with the Northwest Arctic Borough, known as the Community Utility Assistance Program, and then speak a little bit about two new technologies that ANTHC is working on to improve tribal health outcomes. So a little background on Newtok. I know the state of Alaska has been involved in Newtok and Newtok's efforts to relocate for many years and has been a strong leader in that effort and supportive partner in that effort. But just background for everyone, Newtok is a community about 90 miles west of Bethel. It's built on the Ninglick River and is a community that is experiencing pretty severe environmental change. And so there's a few specific things that are leading to changes that have driven a lot of the actions in the community recently. So the first is permafrost degradation. So Newtok was built on permafrost, as many of the communities in Western Alaska are, and that permafrost is melting. And that is causing, when permafrost melts, the ground, the soils that are bonded together by the ice become much looser, and the communities, the ice as it melts is starting to sink. It'll cause the soils in the community to sink. This is increasing flooding in the community, the impacts of flooding. Reduced ice in the Ninglick River is also, specifically in the fall, reducing protection for the community so that the community is no longer protected from fall storms by ice. So we have waves crashing against the shoreline in Newtok. And all these factors combine to create increased erosion. And the erosion in Newtok is averaging about 80 feet per year and has been for about 20 years now. And it's accelerating. Last year, we had one storm where in 10 days, the Newtok village experienced 40 feet of erosion in 10 days from one storm event. It's hard to imagine until you see it. Erosion is usually something you think of as something that's slow and passive. In Newtok, it's a live event. And so ANTHC is working with Newtok, the Newtok village, federally recognized tribe, to support them in that effort to relocate. And the community selected the relocation option many years ago when the Corps of Engineers did an analysis of what would happen with erosion. So this there's a graphic on the screen that highlights it's a map with red lines across it on what erosion is going to occur. And the Corps of Engineers in 2003 projected that in 2017 we would have a house fall into the river from the impacts of erosion. It's 2019, and we expect that first tosh to go in. So the Corps of Engineers 20-year projections were only slightly off. The erosion is progressing and continuing, and Newtok has decided to work towards relocation.
I'm going to pause just for a second and recognize Representative Edgeman has joined us, and thank you, Representative Hopkins, for joining us. Please continue.
So I want to talk a little about what that means. So erosion is this environmental impact, but what does that mean for life in Newtok? And so I've got some notes up here. You know, Newtok, understandably so, decided to relocate and to escape from that danger from erosion that was unavoidable and could not be stopped through the efforts of the Corps of Engineers or the best estimates from the Corps of Engineers. And so Newtok decided to relocate, and as a result, there's been limited state and federal investment into the Newtok Village itself. And so Newtok has no running water and sewer. The boardwalks are rotting and sinking into the permafrost, into the community. The power plant has had limited upgrades in the last 30 years and has regular brownouts. There's insufficient quantity and quality of housing. Newtok has 375 people. We have 65 occupied houses in the community. Average square footage of those houses is about 800 feet. So you have, or 800 square feet, sorry. So you have about 6.5 people and an 800 square foot one room house with no running water and sewer and use of a honey bucket. And often due to the flooding impacts and the environment out there, a lot of black mold from moisture as well. So Newtok has focused all of their efforts on moving to a new site known as Muktavik. So a lot of work has been done in the past. This has been starting since 2003. There's been efforts on a as available basis to start developing this new site. So just a brief recap of what's out there and what's been done in the past is there's been some houses funded out there. It's been through a mix of funds from HIP funds from BIA and NAHASDA funds through HUD and the AVCP Regional Housing Authority. The state of Alaska has provided significant investment to build the beginnings of an evacuation shelter, an evacuation center known as the MEC, the Muktavik Evacuation Center out there. And that was put in I think 2012. A shallow draft barge landing with the state of Alaska DOT program was placed. A water well was drilled out there. There's been a whole bunch of different studies, geotech, survey, water quality bathymetry, a lot of things that are necessary to design a new community. And the airport layout plan was conducted by FAA, or funded by FAA, and conducted by DOT to develop where an airport would go with this site. So Muktavik, for reference, is about 10 miles south of Newtok. It's located on Nelson Island and is, what makes it different and ideal location relocated is it has clean water from the Muktavik Spring. Muktavik is named after a Yupik phrase, gathering water from the spring. It's a traditional location to year-round to gather water. It's also a basalt island, so it's built on rock. So erosion and permafrost, there is permafrost at the site, but much less and discontinuous. And erosion is not a concern. It's erosion in Muktavik is a more natural, more normal expectation for erosion where you get a little change every year as opposed to 80 feet a year. So all of this work has been done in the past. And I know there's a lot that's been done and there's a long story there. And the best place to learn more about it is the State of Alaska Newtok Planning Group website hosted by DCRA has fantastic resources in more detail about what's been done in the past. They'll focus more on where we are today. I want to talk about the Newtok Village and ANTHC relationship and that partnership. So a couple years ago in 2016, ANTHC started to work a little more closely with Newtok on this effort. And one of the specific things we worked on was a community layout plan. So to lay out in finality, what should be done in Muktavik? There's been a scattering of efforts that are needed. We know we need a barge landing, we need an airport, we need housing out there, but let's do it in a cohesive way that lays out what can be done. So the Newtok Village and ANTHC work together through a community-led iterative process to come up with what exactly we want that community to look like. And that determined, we went over what should be built there, where should it be built, and why. So the results of that, after we spent about 6 months every month out in Newtok at this variety of community meetings and surveys, and came to a design that's kind of represented on the screen there as a as what we should all be working towards to build in Muktavik that would eliminate all the health challenges in Newtok and provide a safe and affordable, relatively affordable from a capital and operations and maintenance perspective, new community. So the effort of the community layout plan focused on finalizing that plan. So that involved all the final gaps in survey and geotechnical research, and then finally platting the community, beginning design work, and submitting that plat to the state of Alaska and DNR to get that recorded so that there's lots and everyone can work from the same plan.
I'd just like to take a moment to recognize that Representative Fields has joined us.
The next step on Newtok Village and ANTHC relationship is determined what should be built first. And, you know, there's all these things that need to go into the community, but what's the most important, and when should it be built, and how will it be built, and who's going to pay for it, and how will it be paid for, and then why? And so prioritizing what projects need to be done and when. So this is an effort, again, led by Newtok Village. Newtok sliding through, this is what we need, and ANTHC's role is to support the community and give them all the information to help inform that decision.
Can you talk a little bit about how that relationship has been formalized between the tribe and ANTHC?
Yes, now I will get specifically, there's a couple specific ways we have, and we'll talk about a cooperative project agreement we have with the Newtok Village, another memorandum of agreement we have, and there's a few. I'll get into that in a little bit more specific detail later.
Great, thanks.
And so this master implementation plan really guides, it's the sheet of music that we're working from here, and what gets done first and why, and it guides what funding is gone after and what projects get built with the funding that are done. And this is a cooperative project, a cooperative method between ANTHC and Newtok, so that the community makes the decisions that are important to them and investments that are important to them and prioritizes projects that are important to them with the full information of, you know, what are the pros and cons of that? Is it what will it cost? What are the impacts to other projects? How will that inform future funding acquisitions? So then the next step in the next piece of the Newtok Village and ANTHC relationship is management of design and construction. So design and construction activities in Muktavik have been done by a variety of different groups, some led by the tribe, some by the state of Alaska, and some by the Corps of Engineers, as well as the United States Department of Defense Innovative Readiness and Training Program, which is the program where the National Guard and other reserve groups primarily do training programs to develop public infrastructure for benefit of local communities around the country, but also to provide a training opportunity for service members. So there's been a whole bunch of folks working out there, and ANTHC, and starting in this year, 2018, is working and partnering with the village to oversee the all those design and construction efforts. So we have a lot to design and a lot to build. And so ANTHC now coordinates design of all the infrastructure. We work with Calista to develop the gravel resource in the region and on Muktavik Island, Nelson Island, for Muktavik to supply all the gravel that's needed to build the roads and the house pads, bedding for the water pipes, everything that's needed out there. And the primary contract that ANTHC oversees is what's known as a master builder contract, or what we call a master builder contract, and that's a single contract that was awarded to UIC Construction to oversee the construction of Muktavik, to conduct the construction activities out there. And that was a public RFP best value contract that selected UIC to be a partner within a community out there and maximize local hire and coordinate all the unique logistics required for logistics for this remote site. You know, we talked a lot about having lots of different contractors work out there, and the bidding process would be extensive for the 30 projects we want to build in the next couple of years, and so we have one master builder that works on all the projects at once. So the last piece of the role of the Newtok Village and ANTHC is funding acquisition. So we have planning out what to do, developing that site, or managing the oversight of that site, the design and construction, and then also acquiring funding for future efforts. And so all of this work follows the master implementation plan that was put together with Neutauk Village. And ANTHC works with the community to identify the appropriate funding sources and leverage all the funding sources together to maximize the use of what funds the village does have to accomplish the relocation. And that's done primarily with in coordination with the community on every effort and supported by ANTHC's Environmentally Threatened Communities Grant Center. So I'm going to review a little bit about what's within the Master Implementation Plan, and then I will get into how this relationship is formalized. And it's just an update. What are our goals? What are we working on? The Master Implementation Plan guides kind of three main goals, the first of which is a 2019 goal. That's this year. Our goal is to have establish a year-round occupied community. The relocation for a long time has been pieces, and when is it going to be real? And the answer is in 2019. So our goal is to relocate about one-third of the population this year and provide a minimum level of infrastructure to support that population at the new site. So that includes reliable electricity, an education facility, an emergency landing strip so that medevac access can be provided for that site, self-haul treated water, portable alternative sanitation systems to handle human waste, sufficient fuel storage to make it through the year, a landfill, and then 21 occupied houses. So there's a lot more projects that go into this, but this is the expectation is that by this fall, we have a community that exists at the new location, and it has a minimum level of infrastructure to support it. And so this is whatever determined that minimum level infrastructure was worked on with the General Land Commission and with our state and regional partners and with the community, identifying what's critical for us.
Representative Edgman has a question.
Yes, good morning. So I represented Neutauk in 2014 and 2015 when the redistricting lines were temporarily sort of reconfigured for a couple of years. And when I was out there, and it's granted 5 years ago, I remember walking in the tribal office and there was a matrix on the wall. I don't know if it was Stanley Tom at that time or who it was, but of all the state and federal entities that the tribe had to work with, and they were overwhelmed. It was confusing. The funding streams were, out to here on one agency, here on another agency. Nobody was talking to anybody, it appeared. So as since that time, ANTHC sort of come in as the governing entity of all that, and you're basically, as you've been saying, sort of the master builder of all this?
Yes, so ANTHC's role is a coordinating entity. And so when at Neutauk Village, you're absolutely right. There's so many. We're working with essentially every federal and state agency and regional partners and nonprofits, and there's all kinds of press for the project, and it's a lot to handle for any community, especially a small community. And so Neutauk recognized this and reached out to partners to how can we help oversee this. So ANTHC sits in that coordinating role, and we don't do it by ourselves. We work with the state of Alaska and the Denali Commission specifically at the federal level to help coordinate all those agencies. But ANTHC's current role is to sit in that chair side by side with Neutauk Village and help guide them through all these different funding opportunities and all the rules and regulations associated with it, and then on the project delivery as well.
Follow up.
So there's more Neutauks out there along the coast, as we know, and would ANTHC then assume that role with other communities in the future, or do you have a master plan on that end?
That is a great question, and ANTHC does have efforts to support other environmentally threatened communities. So on the funding side, we have the Environmentally Threatened Communities Grant Center. We have a few other programs to support specific communities, but I'll be honest, it's a ton of work just for one relocation. We have a full-time team of 4 people that works on nothing but this project. And there's way more need out there to support small communities in rural Alaska that are impacted by some of these environmental conditions that are changing. And ANTHC is happy and honored to have the opportunity to help Neutauk, and we expect that there will be more projects like this in the future that we can help, but we are not going to be able to do it by ourselves. We can't be the only one. We expect that many other tribal and regional partners can also support rural communities in those efforts, and we will we'll be happy to work with all of them.
So one last question, Madam Chair. Maybe I'll squeeze a couple things here. So when you're working with state entities, Department of Military, Veterans on Affairs, Department of Transportation, Department of Education, on down, you sign MOAs with those groups. And I'm also curious to squeeze in my second point here, an education facility in a second location that requires money from somewhere. It must be the Yukon Kuskokwim School District. But does that require, that's not any a state capital dollars for that educational facility, is it?
So great question. So one is when ANTHC, so a lot of the and I maybe I should have started with the relationship between ANTHC and the village more detail, but I think most of the time ANTHC is supporting Newtok Village. So Newtok Village continues to have a direct relationship with federal entities, state entities, especially from a funding perspective. And so we have a couple of mechanisms to help us to allow ANTHC to support Newtok in fulfilling those obligations with different state and federal entities. And one's a cooperative project agreement, one's a memorandum of agreement with Newtok. In some cases, ANTHC works directly with the state or federal agency, but primarily that effort is, our effort is to support Newtok in that. So they still maintain direct responsibility for fulfilling whatever obligations and commitments they have with the state. And then as far as the school, so Lower Kuskokwim School District is the entity out there and that operates the school in Newtok. And we've been working with the school district for several years on the project, but there's kind of two situations occurring. So the Muktuvik Evacuation Center, which is out there, can serve as a kind of a massive portable classroom, so to speak. So it'd be operated either as Lower Kuskokwim School District still working through the specifics of their education plan, but the school would have, you know, three or four teachers and administrator renting that facility and having some temporary classrooms in there to use that facility. But that is not, you know, it's not designed as an education facility specifically. It can function that way in the short term to make sure that the youth in Newtok have access to education. But in the long run, a new school will be needed out there to accommodate the entire student population, which is about 110 students.
And Mike, not a question, but a final point, mm-hmm. Madam Chair, just to bring up the point that, you know, I sat on the Northern Waters Task Force, which was a predecessor to the Arctic Policy Commission, which I also sat on, and it was sort of painfully apparent to us that we didn't have any sort of, you know, clearinghouse to do exactly what ANTHC seems to be doing with this one community, knowing that there's other villages up north that, you know, I'm not sure how far Kivalina is behind this, maybe not quite these days, but at one point it was, you know, on the code red sort of category. And, you know, from the state's perspective, at least back then, and I assume perhaps now, it was the Department of Military and Veterans Affairs that was taking the lead on projects that had a lot of other major agencies doing the work. But again, no real sort of systematic way of doing this other than what I'm hearing from ANTHC today, which is, you know, doing a great job.
Thank you. And we agree at the state and the federal level, these are unique projects. No single agency really has moving a community or even protecting a community or partially relocating a community as part of their mission. And so everyone has a role to play, but it's every agency, every entity has a piece that they can contribute, but it's very hard for a lot of programs to stretch what they do to accommodate everything. And so I think one of the main things that ANTHC is working to do is try to fill those gaps and coordinate all those efforts. And everyone wants to help, and it's this effort from the state, the contributions from the state in so many ways have been so critical to the success of the relocation. I think everyone wants to do more than really their agency is supposed to be working on. So we try to keep everybody in their role that they can be the most successful in and coordinate that with the Newtok Village to make sure that everyone gets what they need out of this and we can maximize everyone's contributions.
Thank you. Good morning, Representative Ortiz. Good morning. Thank you for joining us. It's okay. Mr. Dixon, please continue.
So it's important to remember that what we do now is not the only goal. It's the primary focus. We're trying to develop a lot this year so that we can have an year-round occupied community that has some minimum infrastructure to support a year-round population. But the next goal is focused around 2023, and that goal includes a full school to serve the entire population, a DOT maintained airport, a health clinic, beginnings of running water and sewer, starting to clean up Newtok before the community is impacted by erosion and the infrastructure in Newtok goes into the Ninglick River, and then building enough homes to accommodate every single person from Newtok. This goal aligns with the timeline of the erosion. We're expecting the erosion to impact the airport and the school in Newtok somewhere between 2021 and 2023. Those facilities will no longer be able to be operated in Newtok. And to develop Muktovik in time, the Muktovik site in time to accommodate all the needs of the community, all the basic infrastructure needs and housing needs, 2023 is our timeline. And so this is the next step, is working towards this vision of the community. To be clear, this is not, we don't consider this to be done with the relocation. When we'll be done is when the community doesn't have overcrowding in housing, has full running water and sewer, has access to low-cost energy through renewable energy, has economical development, has a trail system to access subsistence resources, and this goal is targeted around 2027. And so the relocation is in three main phases. The first one is getting a population in Newtok year-round. Second one is getting everything that's in Newtok improved to a basic level by 2023 and accommodating the entire population, and by 2027 we want to work towards eliminating a lot of the challenges of living in rural Alaska today and in Newtok specifically. So this is three main stages, and every project within the master implementation plan that the tribe has developed works towards this in a phased manner so that we can work through this step by step and recognize that it doesn't all get done at once.
Mr. Dixon, earlier in your presentation you had mentioned that roughly 6.5 people live in one 800 square foot home. As you look toward the 2027 goal and in terms of eliminating overcrowding, what does that look like in terms of reducing that or expanding the number of square footage in a home?
Absolutely. That's a great question, and one that is very important to the Newtok Village and to ANTHC and to many of our partners that we're working with this on. And so overcrowding is not unique to Newtok. Most rural Alaska communities have not sufficient housing. Insufficient housing in terms of quantity and in terms of space and in terms of what we'd expect. So one of the things we're working on in Muktovik is putting together houses that are appropriate for that place. So the houses that are being built in 2019 are four-bedroom, 1,400 square foot homes that can accommodate big multi-generational families, which is how many families live in Newtok now. And not every house in Muktovik is expected to need to be that size of home, but early on we want to be able to move as many people as possible to get them safe and out of the kind of the public health crisis that Newtok is in now and into a clean, safe from erosion and flooding location in Muktovik. So the early housing is larger. It's also built with 6-star energy rating. So we recognize we don't want to just put in sufficient space. We want to put in space that's affordable to heat. And we also want to put in housing that has good indoor air quality. And so we're putting in ventilation systems in these homes that are both simple and reliable to allow to make sure that we can handle the moist environment that is western along the coastal Alaska.
Thank you.
I want to recap a little bit very recent construction progress, specifically 2018 construction progress. So there's a rock quarry out there being developed by Bryce Inc. that's supplying all the material in Muktovik. And this is a unique opportunity both for economic development and to support this relocation that Representative Edgman mentioned the many other communities that could need support from this, and not all of them have a gravel resource. And gravel is a huge piece of this relocation that makes it possible to have stable infrastructure and roads. And Muktavik's Newtok is lucky in that sense, but it also is a lot of work. And so they've, Rice Inc. and Chilista, working with Newtok Village, have developed a quarry to support this relocation. And substantial progress last year. They've produced tens of thousands of cubic yard of material that are stockpiled for a significant construction season this year and were used in efforts last year. And this is the Muktavik Evacuation Center, primarily funded by the state of Alaska. This evacuation center, you know, it's designed to be able to accommodate the entire population of Newtok for a two-week period in the event of a disaster in Newtok. Now, it will also serve on a more stable basis as the as this education facility operated by Lower Kuskokwim School District. And so this facility, last year was completed by Wolverine Inc., a contractor, and has a heating system in the shell of the facility. It's a very well insulated, about 6,000 square foot facility. Very minimal fuel use is anticipated, and it will serve this summer. I'll talk a little bit more about this as a bunkhouse for the military, who will be helping us to develop the site further. So AVCPRHA has also put in significant work in the community to build new housing. And so the housing is not yet occupied, but four houses were completed last summer. Two homes funded by the Title VI loan program operated by AVCPRHA, and then two were funded by a Housing and Urban Development Imminent Threat Grant. So four homes are out there, plus some of the existing housing that have been done in previous years. And so we now have eight occupiable homes in Muktavik today. They're not supported by electricity, and there's no place to store fuel. But we do have a start to housing to accommodate the first occupants in 2019.
So those homes aren't occupied at this moment?
Three of the homes are seasonally occupied, so folks will stay over there in the summertime. And then the shoulder seasons are in breakup and freeze up, and the storm season, those homes are closed up for the winter, and those folks move back to Newtok, but they're not currently occupied. One of the key considerations is we've got a lot of construction work to do in one season, so we want to maximize the amount of work and maximize the schedule by developing as much as we can in Anchorage. So modular facilities are being developed, primarily the water plant and also this power plant. So the power plant is a little further along than this now, but the power plant will be installed in 2019. It's being developed here in Anchorage, and it's been a big project, partnership with the state of Alaska and Alaska Energy Authority specifically. And a big one last year is Newtok Village developed a road up to that rock quarry, and part of that road was designed to accommodate planes landing on it. And so last year we were able to get regular access from Cessna 207s to land on that emergency landing strip. This is not an airport, and it's not maintained by DOT, but we can land flights out there. So we got about 1,800 feet of runway out there now that we can land 207s, we can land 208s, and this year we're going to work on expanding that, lengthening that a little further so we can get a medevac flight out there. And that's a critical piece and one of the highest priorities for Newtok Village. And it accommodates the logistics a lot easier out there for the construction and for safety. So to talk a little about what are we going to do this year, there's a lot of, the Denali Commission has provided a significant amount of funding for 2019 and many other agencies, and I'll talk a little bit more specifically about the contributions of those agencies and foundations, but I want to talk a little bit about what are we going to do in 2019 and how are we going to have an occupiable village by the fall. So this spring, in about 3 weeks, we'll be flying out to that runway and starting gravel production. Extending the landing strip to 2,000 feet to accommodate the medevac out of Bethel. We'll be completing a barge landing access road so that barges can land and safely offload modular facilities and connexes and heavy equipment, and expand a construction laydown area. We'll do safety improvements for the Muktavik Evacuation Center so that they can be occupied for the summer as a bunkhouse for the innovative readiness and training program of the military. will build access trails to build foundations, house pads and foundations, to build 13 new homes. We'll set up an additional construction camp on site so we can accommodate up to 50 construction workers and accommodate a space for the military's camp facilities. And we'll connect temporary water and sewer to all those facilities. So this is a project that will be done by first week of June. So we have a lot of work to do in the next 2 months to accommodate the big part of the construction season. So starting in June 9th, the Innovative Readiness and Training Program will be coming out with about 50 service members doing 2 week rotations to assist in constructing infrastructure in Muktavik. So they'll be working on developing a landfill, a heavy equipment shop, building 4 houses and about 1 mile of roads. And it's a unique program. It's a good partnership to discuss, and that the IRT provides labor and supplies in their camp, and the Nutak Village supplies materials and designs and permits, and they work together to accomplish a training mission for the IRT, but that results in usable infrastructure for the community. Meanwhile, the power plant will be installed and additional gravel will be produced to support all these efforts. And that'll be through August. And then from August to October, the master builder will be completing 9 houses. The interior of the military will demobilize. The Muktavik Evacuation Center will then have a pioneering school developed. A water plant that's being developed, constructed modularly in Anchorage, will be installed. A limited water distribution system to supply the Muktavik Evacuation Center will be installed. Portable alternative sanitation systems will be installed in each home to eliminate the need for honey buckets. And then an electric distribution system to accommodate provide electricity every facility will be completed.
Can you define for us what a pioneering school?
Yes, that's a good question. So the school district talks about it as a pioneering school because it's not a school that meets all of their needs, but it will provide a minimally sufficient space where they can have a couple classrooms, a couple bathrooms, and an office space within that the MEC facility to be able to conduct education. So we're expecting, you know, Nutak has about 110 students. We're set to move about a third of the population by October 15th. And that would result in about 40 students in Muktavik. The school district is planning to provide education services for those 40 students through on-site education and tele-education. And so the pioneering school, so the interior of that facility now, it's a big open space with a heating system. And we'll install a couple bathrooms, a fire suppression system, and several classrooms to accommodate the needs of the school district. The good news is those same facilities also have a warming kitchen. The same upgrades to the facility will allow that facility to be used as a community center in the future.
Thank you. Representative Ortiz has a question.
Yes.
In relationship to television or tele-education, et cetera, is your broadband capacity adequate out there at this time?
So there's telecom is an interesting one. So we're working with GCI and through UUI as the primary provider out there. And so there is 3G cell service on site. The school district plans to install a microwave repeater. I'm not a telecom expert, but they're a microwave repeater from Nutak, so they can provide education from the some of the services from teachers in Nutak over to the Muktavik site. And so the school district, and most I think rural school districts are funded through for tele-education through USDEA, I'm not sure if it's RD, but U.S. Department of Agriculture to support some of that telecom needs. And so they will. This for the school will have a system. We're putting in an internet system for the construction effort that will be able to be reutilized by the community over the winter. So they're putting in some limited hardware, but the long-term solution is going to require a larger scale microwave repeater, I think is the right term, to get service from a larger cell tower site that's in Tanunik on Nelson Island but doesn't have line of sight access to Muktavik currently. So we have limited service now, but we know it needs to be improved, and so does GCI.
Thank you.
So 2019, there's a lot going on. We have a lot to accomplish in a very short amount of time. We're expecting to have 100 construction workers on site, developing all these sites at the peak of the construction season. This is I want to say unprecedented, but it's a much larger than typical rural Alaska community projects, accomplishing a lot in a short amount of time, and it adds a lot of complexity to the effort. But we're not forgetting the projects that need to happen in 2020, because we're not, 2019, even if we accomplish everything successfully, will not be enough. And so 2020, we have funded a bulk fuel farm funded through the Alaska Energy Authority. We have two duplex housing units funded through Alaska Housing Finance, a heat recovery system funded by the U.S. Department of Energy. The DOT airport is funded. The design is ongoing. They're expected to go to bid for construction in January of 2020. For that project, which start construction in 2020 and hopefully be completed 2021. And we have some funding to begin cleaning up in Newtok, some of the infrastructure that will be abandoned or most at risk of going into the Ninglick River.
Mr. Dixon, I'm not sure if you've covered this morning. Apologies if you have, but it sounds like there's a lot of movement and active construction on the site this year, but how long has this particular community been working toward getting to this point? How many years in the making has this work been?
Newtok is recognized and been accepted and universally decided to relocate since 2003. And 2007 made significant progress, and then in 2012 significant progress also occurred, and then there's been, you know, progress has come mostly with funding and key coordination efforts. And so it's been a recent, in 2016, the Denali Commission's further involvement and increased funding has really jump-started the project to get back to the point that it is today.
Thank you.
So 2020, you know, the next projects that really need, you know, we have some infrastructure projects going in, but the key next phases that still require additional funding are additional housing units and road and power line extensions to reach all those housing units. And so we're working, it's our primary funding focus right now is on this 2020 goal. And we're pursuing every funding source you can imagine to achieve that. And so this is the what's being done on the ground and what's being done in the office to accommodate that 2020 effort as well. So I want to talk about how we are doing this. And I think this is the best focus for this today is the relationship with is Newtok Village and ANTHC. And so we have a cooperative project agreement. And so Newtok Village Council, the governing body for the Newtok Village, provides pre-approval of all the projects. They help select the contractors that were used, sit on the review committees for RFPs, and they provide local coordination and support. So that includes supporting the contractors, helping with hiring. It includes council meetings and council decisions to make value engineering decisions on the projects. And so Newtok is side by side with ANTHC every step of the way. This isn't ANTHC doing this project for Newtok. It's ANTHC supporting Newtok Village to accomplish their relocation. So ANTHC, we go to Newtok every month, and I texting with their local relocation coordinator every single day, and meeting with their relocation coordinator and talking on the phone with them every day, going to the community every month. We coordinate a steering committee between which is the Denali Commission, and then Sally Cox from DCRA, the Newtok Native Corporation, and the Newtok Village Council. We oversee design and construction activities, and then we coordinate regional, state, and federal partners, and with assistance from the state of Alaska on that effort specifically.
Representative Edgman and I were just talking. The Newtok doesn't have an active municipal government, is that correct? So the community's leadership and local government leadership structure is through the tribal government, is that correct?
That's correct. Newtok is only a tribe. There's no second class city out there.
Thank you.
And that's, I think, really important too, because Newtok still maintains all the responsibilities of providing safety and trash service and water service and Newtok. And all the local government needs that any community has, they have to do that as well as relocate the community. And it's a massive burden, and one that we work with Newtok to support. So next method of partnership with ANTHC and Newtok Village Council is a memorandum of agreement that allows the Newtok Village Council to make use of ANTHC previously competitively selected term contracts. So NTHC puts out an RFP to have architecture and engineering firms to be able to design water and sewer, whatever, and NewTalk can work with whatever funding agency they're working with to basically approve that procurement, and they can utilize that those pre-approved contractors as if they were their own. So what this does is it allows NewTalk Village to access supported ANTHC to oversee design and construction contractors, as well as reduce procurement time and cost, which has a value on its own, but it also is critically important on the schedule that we're working on, which is driven by erosion and outside force, and we don't have time to wait around for 90-day procurements all the time. And so we use a previously competitively selected contractors that have been vetted and approved, and NewTalk can access those contractors as well. And it also allows support for NewTalk Village and invoice processing and contract management with those contractors, so everyone gets paid on time and quickly. And yeah, it's a unique opportunity that NewTalk has and many rural communities have with ANTHC to work with our design and construction team.
Representative Edwin.
So you might not be able to sort of address this question, but it's interesting, given the fact that there isn't a municipality out here, you were able to work outside the state procurement code and really have a direct relationship with the tribal entity that allowed you to kind of move things a lot more swiftly than maybe if you've been working with state entities. Is that
it's interesting because each funding source that NewTalk has its own rules. And so when they get funding from the state, they have to follow the state procurement code. And so the way that the memorandum agreement works is NewTalk says, hey, we want to design the MEC with funding from the state. And they go to the state grant management officer and say, hey, we want to utilize this previous procurement method that was done. Can we access this? And the state either says yes or they say no, whether it meets the need, whether it meets that procurement requirement. So that's the case with every source of funds that NewTalk would use out of this. So it's the tribe's determination of whether they want to access this or whether they want to pursue independently their own procurement.
But to the chair, mm-hmm. but clearly most of the funding streams have been federal.
Historically, there's been a lot of state investment in NewTalk. From ANTHC, since ANTHC has been involved, there's been more federal funding, and most of that funding is from the Denali Commission specifically. Okay. So another aspect of the NewTalk Village and ANTHC partnership is NewTalk Village applied to the Innovative Readiness and Training Program be a partner and have an opportunity to put their projects forth to be selected by the RT to conduct a training exercise. And so they were selected. This is the second time they've been selected about in 2011, 2012. And actually that was a longer term program. It was a multi-year effort by the RT. This year, IRT selected them for one season's worth of work. But all of the work that gets done that IRT does, will be doing, is coordinated by ANTHC. And so NewTalk Village, ANTHC and NewTalk Village work together to find out which projects do we think would be appropriate for IRT, and then ANTHC makes sure that the IRT has everything they need to do that. So that's a key partnership here with the U.S. military and ANTHC and NewTalk Village to make sure that everyone gets what they need out of this project. So one of our most critical partners is the state of Alaska. So I want to go through some of the specific ways that we partner with the state of Alaska on this project. The DCRA, and specifically Sally Cox at the state of Alaska, has been a key partner. And so DCRA provides web hosting of all the studies, all the designs, all the work that is done on this project gets hosted on the NewTalk Planning Group website with the Community and Regional Affairs. They help distribute a newsletter that we send out quarterly, and we'd be happy to share with all of you if you'd like to be on it, that provides updates on the project every 3 months. And then we also have NewTalk Planning Group meetings where every agency that wants to attend can come, and we provide updates and solicit input and advice from all of those entities, state, federal, regional, and otherwise. And then also DCRA is working to support a move-out, move-in manual that's, you know, we talk a lot about what we're building and what we're going to be out there, but it's really important that we need to work with the people in NewTalk Village to make sure that they understand all the changes that are going to be happening from moving to a new site. And so that includes, what will education be like? What will health service be like? What will How will you get your water? How will you pay your electric bills? All those kind of important things will be changing from NewTalk. And so ANTHC works with DCRA to produce the content, to train folks, residents in the community, to support this relocation. Alaska Energy Authority has been hugely helpful. They've been working with the NewTalk power plant facility and troubleshooting and repair of that facility to keep the lights on while the village is working to relocate. And they'll also be performing commissioning activities on the new power plant. So AEA continues to be a key partner outside of funding projects. They're supporting with their technical assistance in the success of the electrical system. And then DENR and DEC primarily provide a permitting and regulatory support role and also guidance on decisions for projects about what will work and what will not work in terms of water and sewer service and landfill service in Muktuvik, and then also performing recording the plat in Muktuvik that defines where homes and facilities will be. And then DOT oversees the design of the airport and management of the new airport that's going in. And so we work with the state of Alaska, many different groups, and these are just some of the highlights from some of the non-funding ways we work with the state of Alaska. On funding, state of Alaska previous has funded the access road to the Muktuvik Evacuation Center. The shell of the Muktuvik Evacuation Center was paid for by state of Alaska. The original shallow draft barge landing access was paid for by the state of Alaska. Currently, and thank you so much for $960,000 in matching funds that were provided for housing last year. It's key, you know, the village has received a lot of federal funding, but a lot of that federal funding requires a match. And the Denali Commission is funding a lot of the housing and requires a 20% match on construction activities. And the state of Alaska funds provided for housing are a key linchpin in allowing the NewTalk Village to leverage additional funds from outside sources. And funds provided previously to the Denali Commission for transportation by the state of Alaska are also being utilized in this project to develop all the access roads that are going to all these facilities. And then DMVA overseeing funds originally from FEMA to do buyout of 7 homes in Muktuvik that are the homes that are in NewTalk, I should say, that are most imminently threatened from erosion are being bought out. They actually started demolition of those homes yesterday so that those this spring when the ice thaws and erosion continues, those homes will not go into the Ninglik River. And so DMVA has been a huge partner in making sure that's possible. All of those funds from that buyout have been reinvested by those homeowners with the NewTalk Village Council to develop additional housing in Muktuvik.
Mr. Dixon, I recall in several conversations and generations of this project ago, I thought I recall that there was some intent to relocate existing buildings from the existing community across the ice over to the new site. Is that still in the works in terms of planning for this particular project?
Yes, so that is a key opportunity, and I think one of the key things we like to talk about is we're relocating a people and not the infrastructure. So I talked a lot about the infrastructure and housing in NewTalk earlier, and a lot of the facilities are not great condition in NewTalk, and we don't really want to bring the problems of NewTalk to the new site. And so that's one consideration. The other is it's the technical challenge of lifting a home off of its foundation in NewTalk and getting over to Muktuvik requires the work to be done in the wintertime and requires the Ninglik River to freeze all the way. And that doesn't really happen that often anymore. So it's really hard to plan for that to be possible. So there's a limited amount of structures. We've identified 3 homes and 2 community facilities that are of a quality worthy of relocation. We will need a year where the ice is solid enough and frozen and thick enough that we can transport with heavy equipment a home across that 9 miles of river.
And just a follow-up question, in how many years has it been that's been a goal, and of those years, how many has the ice been in a condition to actually support that type of move?
That's a good question. And it's a little bit, you know, we've had about 5 years where that was an intent with this original approach, this DMVA buyout funding, and hoping that we could move those houses instead of buying them out and demolishing them. And I say we, it's the NewTalk Villages project specifically they've been working on. And they They've had 3 years where it would not have been possible, and it was really difficult to even get snow machines across the ice, and 2 years where maybe it would have been possible for a brief period in the springtime in March when it was the ice was at its thickest. So it's very hard to plan for, and especially that the weather doesn't always participate with grant timing either, and so it's hard to, from a design and construction perspective, rely upon that as the methodology. We also asked the military to look in airlifting the homes. Is that possible? And no, it's not.
Mm-hmm. Thank you.
I want to talk about NewTalk's other partners. And so the Denali Commission is the lead federal agency on this effort, the primary funder of the project. And they help to also coordinate other federal agencies. A key determination is the Denali Commission's funds have a special statute that allows them to be treated as non-federal match. So even though the Denali Commission is a federal agency, their funds can be used as non-federal match. So having funds from the Denali Commission is critical to the relocation opportunity because it opens up so much more in funding opportunities. The flexibility of the funding is such that we can use it to develop, you know, programs that don't fall into one of the silos of various state and federal agencies. And it also allows to use that funding to go after Department of Energy money or HFC. Housing, building duplexes out there requires a small match, and going after imminent threat grants and other opportunities that give a bonus for having match that most rural Alaska communities don't have the funds on hand to put up for match. With a small amount of Denali Commission money, or in this case a large amount of Denali Commission money, you can leverage a lot more additional funds. So the village is working with the entire alphabet soup of federal agencies, BIA, HUD, FEMA, DOE, but also foundations. So not all the money in this project is from the government. There's been the United Methodist Commission on Relief has put up almost $1 million for development of portable alternative sanitation systems so we can eliminate honey buckets at the new village site. And then the National Fish and Wildlife Foundation has awarded a grant of $2.7 million to continue cleanup work in NewTalk. And so I think one of the key things is having all this funding together and managed in one fell swoop and allow the matching funds to be used to generate more effort is encouraging other investment from outside entities into the community's relocation. Additionally, the Corps of Engineers and the FAA are funding have funded portions of the project, and the FAA specifically is funding the airport out there through DOT, and so that's a critical project to the future and the success of the relocation. So there's a wide variety of partners out there, and they're all contributing, and we work with NewTalk Village to make sure that everyone's working on what they can. And I don't want to leave out regional partners. Other NewTalk partnerships include and are critical is Yukon Kuskokwim Health Corporation, the Lower Kuskokwim School District, AVCP Regional Housing Authority, and AVCP Inc. All these regional partners, there are others as well, contribute towards the success of the project in planning. YKHC will be operating a small clinic in Muktavik in 2019, which will be an exam room in one of the existing facilities. They're participating in environmental health programs to eliminate bed bugs and efforts like that so that we don't bring NewTalk challenges to Muktavik. They perform water and sewer design review. The school operates the school in NewTalk, which is an anchor for that community that provides them a place of refuge when their power plant goes out, provides water when their water plant is down, provides a safe place during storms, and it serves as, in so many ways, as many rural communities, that school serves as a key anchor in the community. And they also are working towards operating that school facility in Muktavik. And they also are currently supporting residents that are being displaced in NewTalk through the demolition projects. They're helping with some of their excess teacher housing to accommodate, provide temporary housing for folks. The school district does so much, and that effort is all coordinated with NewTalk Village and ANTHC. And then AVCP RHA, in addition to providing housing construction and funding, they also work on providing updates to a housing policy for the village. And so it's not just construction funding, it's also working on how NewTalk will manage their housing at the new site. So before I move on, is there any further questions on the NewTalk Village relocation where we stand?
Not a question, more of a comment. Actually, I do have one small question. So I just want to make sure that I understand the relationship between the tribes and ANTHC for the coordination and delivery of the support is through a memorandum of agreement that's established.
Yeah, so there's a cooperative project agreement specifically. So ANTHC has this typically with many, and specifically environmental health and engineering, with many tribes in rural Alaska on water and sewer projects, where ANTHC supports the community in developing and managing funds that they receive for water and sewer projects. We'll help them to carry out all the grant conditions and requirements of that. So this is similar with NUTOC. It's just a little bit of a unique cooperative project agreement that establishes more specific, more additional roles and responsibilities, but for our partnership with each other. So the funding from that cooperative project agreement allows for funds received by NUTOC or funds received by ANTHC to be managed by this process of following the master implementation plan and following the vision of the tribe and implementing the vision of the tribe and securing the tribe's approval and input at every step along the way.
Great, thank you. So not a question, but more of a comment that your presentation this morning indicates to me that community needs across Alaska are unique, they're complex, they're multi-layered, and they're always an exercise in endurance and perseverance for communities and many of our state's residents, and also that tribal leaders are ready to engage and may simply just need coordination support. And I, for one, really appreciate the work that ANTHC is doing to help support tribal capacity to advocate for their community, especially on what has become a multi-decade project.
Thank you. We appreciate that, and we and I specifically draw inspiration from leadership in NUTOC. They've endured a lot, and they continue to fight and work every day for their community, and yeah, we're honored at the opportunity to support them. So I know originally had an hour planned, and so we're already at an hour.
You still have time. Please continue.
Okay, thank you. So I want to talk about a couple other programs, projects that ANTHC is working on with our rural Alaska partners, and one of them is the Community Utility Assistance Program. So this is a project, and I will say up front that I do not specifically work on this project. I work with some folks to share this opportunity, but I work almost exclusively with NUTOC. And so I'll talk a little bit about this, but I may not be able to answer all questions on this, but I'm happy to refer you to the folks that can. So the Community Utility Assistance Program is a partnership between the Northwest Arctic Borough, ANTHC, Manilik, and the rural communities in that region to support water and sewer. And it's funded by the Northwest Arctic Borough with payment in lieu of taxes from the Red Dog Mine. And so the Northwest Arctic Borough has wanted to put forth a program that would reduce the amount of water and sewer emergencies that are experienced, so freeze-ups and running out of water and opportunities like that that require an emergency response from the borough or the state or the federal government. They wanted to reduce those emergencies through preventative maintenance, primarily. They wanted to reduce water and sewer rates. A lot of water and sewer rates in rural Alaska are very expensive. Operating water and sewer in rural Alaska with small number of users and high costs of energy and a limited base to share costs means water and sewer costs can be quite high. So they wanted to reduce water and sewer rates for their communities because they wanted to provide that health benefit and make sure that folks could afford the health benefits of those services. They wanted to improve career opportunities for utility operators and provide more of a career ladder and more of a long-term job than is often the case with rural utilities. They want to improve competitiveness and eligibility for capital funding from state and federal programs. So they formed this program, this project, the Community Utility Assistance Program. The partnership basically works where the Northwest Arctic Borough will pay operators salaries, provide training, and purchase fuel for all the regional utilities in the community and all the communities within the region's utilities. So ANTHC's role in this is ANTHC provides billing and payroll services. We oversee operations and maintenance and help provide some of the training. And then the communities hire their operators. In order to receive the benefits from this program, they must meet State of Alaska best practices requirements. So there's a best practice developed by DCRA and DEC to guide best practices for operating water and sewer, but they also have managerial capacity and kind of impact the whole technical capacity of a community's government. And so for the communities to receive this benefit, they've got to meet these standards. And then Manelik provides operations and maintenance support and office space for ANTHC staff out of Cotsview to support this effort. So it's a partnership between multiple entities in the region to help raise capacity at the community level and reduce water and sewer rates. So I want to go back to the goals a little bit here. Reduce average residential water and sewer rates by two-thirds. We want to reduce emergencies through improved maintenance, provide that regional training and support, and increase construction grant eligibility. So this program is about a $1.8 million investment across 10 communities in the Northwest Arctic Borough, and that effort is all guided at this health improvement from water and sewer. The key partnership with the state on this project is it's based around best practices. This, every community in rural Alaska is evaluated for their water and sewer capacity through the best practices program, and that is the basis for this program. So the state provides the guidance that rural communities and the tribal groups then fulfill. So the goal of this program is it'll improve scoring and fulfillment of those criteria. And then lastly, the remote maintenance worker program and the local government special programs contribute towards fulfilling these training obligations of this program. So the state is a part hand in hand with ANTHC and the Northwest Arctic Borough to deliver this program. So what are the results? It's only been around a year, but so far there have been no emergencies required to date, and this is primarily through proactive action on preventive maintenance and the additional support provided to these communities. Average water and sewer rates have been dropped by two-thirds across the region. Preventive maintenance plan compliance, which is a component of that best practice scores, have improved from 27% to 100%, and the Manelik region has the highest average best practice scores in the state. So the program, it's working, and it's only been 1 year, but it's a good program that we expect to continue for the next 5 years. Any questions on the Community Utility Assistance Program? Okay. I want to talk about two other programs. So ANTHC is working with some of our tribal partners to develop some technologies to solve problems in rural Alaska that are difficult to address otherwise. And the first I'll talk about, and I mentioned it briefly earlier with New Talk, is the Portable Alternative Sanitation System. Portable alternative, so what is the problem? Well, there's a lot of problems with delivering water and sewer in rural Alaska. It's very expensive to install. For one, it can be expensive to operate, and a lot of that's driven by the environmental challenges in the communities and the difficult environment to provide water and sewer. And there's some communities where the environment is, it's gonna be always going to be too expensive to develop water and sewer in those communities. And so, but the answer can't just be that we're gonna leave these communities with honey buckets. And so ANTHC and many of our partners won't, in the state of Alaska, institute the Water and Sewer Challenge to try to find an alternative to running water, to pipes in these communities that can still provide the key health benefits without the same capital cost. So Portable Alternative Sanitation System is ANTHC's response to that challenge. And so those communities, there's 32 villages that don't have full running water and sewer, and for those, some of those communities can accommodate running water and sewer through piped infrastructure, but for those that can't, and some of the specific homes around the state that couldn't be added to an existing water and sewer system, FAST is a solution. We want the solution to be something that was simple, both to build and to operate, had a lower capital cost and a lower operational cost. So what is FAST and how does it work? So FAST is a it's two components, a water component and a sewer component. And then the water component is an in-home simple water treatment system with a filter and a chlorine add. And it's about a 100-gallon storage tank in each house that water from any source can be provided, whether that's water catchment or from an existing watering point for the community. That provides water in the home for washing hands specifically is the biggest focus, but also for drinking water and for cooking. You can provide pass to use pass to provide water for showers and things like that. It just requires a lot more water hauling. The second component and the more complicated component is the sewer component of the Portable Alternative Sanitation System. It's based around a separating toilet where liquids are disposed of locally and solid waste is dried with a fan and then continues to be hauled out by the homeowner. But it's a dried product that gets hauled a lot less often. So a honey bucket in a home of a family of six may be hauled out every single day. The dried product from past may be hauled out from the same size family once a week. So it reduces exposure and hauling of that waste. It also improves indoor air quality through the fan, which can improve air quality for the whole home. And so this system is not as good as running water. It does not provide the same health benefits, but it is practically a solution that can provide an improvement at a much lower cost. So this includes the main benefits are improved access to hand washing, clean water for drinking, improved indoor air quality, reduced waste hauling, and it's portable and affordable. So any questions on PASS so far? So this project is a partnership that is originally funded by ANTHC and the Indian Health Service. TCC, Town Chiefs Conference, has also funded some of the PASS efforts have been done. And now the United Methodist Commission on Relief is funding some of these projects. So this is all tribally funded or foundation funded efforts. The design and installation and testing of this was done by ANTHC with private sector partners in Life Water Engineering, Camp Water Engineering, and Cold Climate Housing Research Center. The system is patented and is being manufactured in Alaska by a company called Silverline LLC. That Silverline is the opportunity to sell this technology and sell these products to communities all over the Arctic that could benefit from this. We know that Canada and Russia and entities that are not tribal entities in Alaska could benefit from this service as well. To date, it's been installed in Kivalina, Alatna, Alakakit, Chalkitsik, and Oscarville. This summer we'll be installing another roughly 20 systems in Kivalina and 21 systems in Newtok. That's the portable alternative sanitation system, and it's a rural Alaska solution developed by the tribes and ANTHC to solve a problem that is difficult to solve with state and federal partners. The next project I want to talk about is a passive thermosiphon conversion project that ANTHC is working on.
I have a question, sorry, before we move on. Village Safe Water is a significant partner in terms of funding water and sewer projects throughout rural Alaska. Has there been any conversation with that state-funded program about how to maximize or leverage those dollars with a less expensive system like this?
Absolutely. And so Village Safe Water, in partnership with the EPA, has worked on the Alaska Water and Sewer Challenge, which is looks to develop a similar or many alternatives to non-pipe systems. So they've been working towards that solution for many years now. And while no funding has been received, we, ANTHC and the regional health organizations have worked with Village Safe Water and DEC overall to kind of coordinate this effort. I mean, the reality is that there's $2 billion worth of need in terms of water and sewer for development in rural Alaska. PASS will not fulfill all of that need. So the investments in rural water and sewer infrastructure from Village Safe Water and other partners, we need pipes, but we also need something else. And so while the state hasn't funded any PASS units to date, we do coordinate with both DEC and DCRA and regional partners to try to coordinate who can accomplish what with the limited funding that is out there.
And one final question on this particular topic, at least for me, is can you give us a high-level comparison of the difference in cost between serving a home with running water and sewer versus this particular technology?
Absolutely. So on the running water and sewer can be varies widely by how much it costs to install across rural Alaska, depending on how big the community is and the environmental conditions, whether it's in southeast Alaska, whether it's in a permafrost region or very remote. So running water and sewer can cost anywhere from $100,000 to $400,000 per house. The portable alternative sanitation system on the low end is about $20,000, and on the high end is about $50,000. And so it is quite a bit cheaper, but it does not provide the same health benefits as running water and sewer. It does not provide the full benefit that access to unlimited water resource does.
Representative Vance?
Yes, thank you, Madam Chair. I'm just trying to get a a picture in my mind of this community. You mentioned a health clinic and a school. And this they have the limited pass system in their homes, but you haven't mentioned where they're going to, you know, bathe and do their laundry. So what is being provided for the community for those that aspect of sanitation?
That is a great question. I appreciate that. I could talk about Newtok and Muktavik all day, but one of the projects that is out there is the community has a construction camp currently that has a washateria, essentially. They have a mess hall and 24 beds, and they also have the washateria facility, which has about 3 washers, 3 dryers, 4 toilets, and then 3 showers. And so when the construction season ends, although it won't completely end October 15th, that facility will be accessible by the community to provide some of those benefits that aren't provided by PASS. And ANTC would recommend that PASS is accompanied by access to a laundry facility that can provide washers and dryers. So in Newtok, they will, and in Muktavik, I should say specifically, they will have that facility available for residents. The Muktavik Evacuation Center, which will have the school, will also have running water and sewer. It'll be part of the limited distribution system for water and have a small sewer system to accommodate it, and it will have several toilets and that can be used by community members, primarily the school, but we know that it will be also be used in the evenings and such for community access.
Follow up. So is there plans for a full-time, because 3 washers for 65 families does not accommodate, and that doesn't really answer the question for a wash house for bathing as well for the long term.
Agreed. It is not sufficient, and one of the challenges that we're working on now is that we have, you know, we have a fair amount of funding, but we have a massive amount of needs. And so when it comes to what projects are provided from that, we could spend a lot of money on developing improved access to laundry facilities. But the community in Newtok Village's priority is housing and being able to support relocation of their residents from Newtok. And so while, you know, many folks would like to see more investment in some of the infrastructure portions, we want to maximize housing and follow the Newtok Village's desires and priorities in developing that. And so we need everything. We can't provide it all. And so a lot of the services they're providing are less than ideal. And so for 2019 especially, and Newtok Village has been very upfront about their approach to a pioneering relocation that includes a willingness to move to a site that doesn't have full services. And that includes limited access to laundry facilities. It includes, you know, no seat fare, airfare into the site. It includes, you know, limited health services. We're not going to have a full clinic there. We're not going to have a full school there. We're trying to get a little bit of each of those so that there is some benefit to the community, but it's going to require more investment to get a full level of service. And in the short term, housing is our priority based upon this limited minimum level of infrastructure.
Thank you.
So just to clarify, what I'm hearing is that the community is locally, they're making the decision to compromise in terms of the level of need in order to accommodate some of those initial housing needs and making sure that the community is, that their homes are not falling into the river.
Yes, absolutely. And so it is a local decision guided by information flow. Like, well, it's a choices for the community. We provide, you could spend $2 million on this or $500,000 on this. This are the impacts of making this decision. These are the funding sources available for this type of project. These are the funding sources available for this type of project. And understanding all of that, how do you want to proceed? And so, you know, I've come to an agreement on what that minimum level of infrastructure is, and having the lights on and having access for emergency medevac, having the portable alternative sanitation systems in homes to provide some health benefit and some quality of life improvements there, having treated water available for haul, having a limited washateria service, all those are decision of the community. And it's not what we want, but what we want and how much money we have don't line up.
Please continue.
The last project I'll talk about ANTHC is working on is a passive thermosiphon conversion. So thermosiphons are basically a refrigeration system to keep infrastructure. They keep the ground frozen. And basically, transfer cold from the ground, temperature heat from the ground, I should say, to the air so that the ground stays frozen. And many of the thermosiphons from Alaska are what's called a passive thermosiphon, which means there's no energy going into them, and it just happens through a natural evaporation process. But as temperatures warm and change, those thermosiphons, the temperature differential required to create the benefit of keeping that ground frozen no longer works, and those thermosiphons fail. So there are a lot of solutions out there to deal with thermosiphons like this, and they include active management of those thermosiphons, which typically involves like a chiller plant and energy and pipes that go out to all the thermosiphons and run it like a refrigeration system for all the pipes. And I'm not an expert on thermosiphons, but it's an expensive to operate system. They do it for the Alyeska pipeline. There's over 120,000 thermosiphons on the Alyeska pipeline, and many of the projects on the North Slope and on the pipeline use these active management systems. But they're expensive to operate, and they require refrigeration specialists essentially to operate those systems. And so for small rural Alaska communities that maybe have 20 thermosiphons projecting a water tank or a community building or a power plant, that type of solution doesn't really work. And so we want to come up with something that, again, focused on a low technical complexity that could be handled locally and maintained locally, had a low capital cost, and was low maintenance. So the project ANTHC is working on partners with Cold Climate Housing Research Center and Life Water Engineering, and it's in the prototype stage. It's currently expected for application in rural settings in 2020, and basically it's a system. It's a partially active system. It takes a small solar panel, ties it to a attachment to the thermosiphons, which allows for a partially active use of the refrigeration in there, so the passive thermosiphon can work in some of those challenging temperatures that are being experienced currently in the winter in Alaska. And that ANTHC's work on a patent, again, it would be intended for local manufacturer, so that local manufacturers in Alaska can produce this. We hope that it's a solution for thermosiphons everywhere, but it's very specifically designed for small rural communities to be able to operate. Is there any further questions?
Just a comment, Madam Chair.
Sure, Representative Kopp.
Thank you, Gavin. It was great. Great presentation. You know, it's good to see such an evolved partnership. When I was listening to Mr. Dixon talk, I was thinking that I think there's only 8 countries in the world that are substantially larger than Alaska. So we're like the top 10 in size in the world, and which is why we always have a challenge with coming up with single solutions for housing and infrastructure or education or health care, public safety, transportation. And I'm encouraged to see this type of ANTHC taking a lead with a project like this, because I think it's this type of a direction we need to go, where we have regional councils with expansive partnership and expansive capacity for making decisions and building consensus. So you can bring in the Denali Commission, the state of Alaska, you know, the tribal entities, the federal partners, and the to come up with solutions for regions of the state on all these areas. I think a pilot project like this, clearly they've been willing for a long time. You said since 2003. My guess is that's probably how they kind of self-selected into this by a readiness to partner early on. But, I'm encouraged to see it, but I'm also thinking that it's this type of a model that we need to apply broadly across, you know, public safety, maybe looking at regional solutions and education too. But Alaska's too big for a single solution state. Yeah. Thank you, Madam Chair.
Mm-hmm. Well, Representative Edgeman.
Well, and just to follow on those comments, thank you for the opening, Representative Kopp. You know, it's interesting. This committee was set up to focus on sort of tribal affairs, but in looking at tribal affairs, you're essentially looking at all rural Alaska. You know, it's not lost on me that Alaska Native Tribal Health Consortium is a tribal umbrella entity that brings in a lot of money into Alaska. And, you know, the Nutak relocation project in some ways is a capital budget for a lot of urban entities to be, you know, having some work. You know, the end product is out in rural Alaska, but Bryce Construction and all the other entities involved are urban located. And it's also not lost on me, not to get too astray here, but, you know, the issue of erosion is a sleeping giant in rural Alaska, and the University of Alaska plays a big role in erosion, as is the partnerships with Department of Community and Regional Affairs, the Alaska Energy Authority, a number of entities, which under the current budget proposal, and I hate to make this into a political issue, but are on the chopping block. And so you've got federal entities that, you know, the number, the federal dollars that roll into Alaska are tremendous. And the sort of the ANTHC stepping in and filling the shoes of, at one point, used to be the Department of Community and Regional Affairs, and a Village Safe Water Program was much more prominent. And we're a state with challenges that, as you said, sometimes are almost insurmountable, because a lot of those 32 villages that you talked about really don't have good water supplies, or they don't have conditions for water and sewer. So it's not that money can come in and fill it. But I guess the point I'm trying to make here is that things in Alaska are more expensive, they're more complicated, they involve a lot of revenue streams, and they involve, I think, a lot of understanding in terms of what makes things work and don't work. And that's why I think we need to, in many respects, stand back and learn more about how our state works and the symbiotic relationships between what's happening in a Nutak and maybe down the road in a Kotlik, a Shishmaref, a Kivalina, or these other villages, and the fact that we don't really have a umbrella governing entity here in the state that I'm aware of that would do what ANTHC seems to be doing on largely an ad hoc basis with this community. And that, you know, we have a lot of learning, a lot of understanding to do, and really appreciate, Madam Chair, you having this presentation today, and maybe in the future having ANTHC come before this committee just by itself to learn more about what you do holistically and how you work with the state in an era when state dollars are dwindling, but a lot of those needs are not dwindling in the far, you know, flung communities in the state. That to wrap things up, also sort of interface with urban Alaska and sort of help the economy as a whole and help all of us as a whole stay as a healthy state. So I'll step off my soapbox, and but I wanted to provide those comments.
Thank you.
Before we wrap up today, I do also just want to add to both of my colleagues' statements. We've talked a lot in these initial weeks of this committee about the role of tribes and communities, defining the different types of tribal entities that exist, the different Alaska Native corporations, and really talking about how those structures work together. And as we were, you know, on the House floor considering the establishment of this committee, one of the reasons that I spoke as a proponent of it was to acknowledge that tribes, tribal nonprofits within the Alaska Native community, and the state have shared goals. You've indicated in your presentation this morning, whether that's reducing costs of various infrastructure systems or just establishing sustainable communities or providing for the health and welfare of really remote, far-flung communities, as Representative Edgman mentioned, are shared values that we talked about in some of our initial hearings, and things that rural communities have in common with the state in our interests in terms of moving forward together. So we appreciate, Mr. Dixon, your time to come here this morning to not talk about these concepts in abstract, but in how they are actually happening on the ground in communities across Alaska with real dollars, with real community leaders, and all of the work that you've done in developing those tribal partnerships across the state, in working alongside community leaders, and providing support in establishing capacity for community leaders that want to advocate for their homes. So if there are no other questions from the committee, thank you, Mr. Dixon, for your presentation this morning. I do want to advise committee members that this Thursday, March 28th, this committee will not be meeting. The time is 9:32 a.m., and this hearing of the House Special Committee on Tribal Affairs is now adjourned.